The Absurd Man. From The Possessed. If Stavrogin believes, he does not think he believes. If he does not believe, he does not think he does not believe. My field, said Goethe, is time. That is indeed the absurd speech. What, in fact, is the absurd man? He who, without negating it, does nothing for the eternal. Not that nostalgia is foreign to him, but he prefers his courage and his reasoning. The first teaches him to live without appeal and to get along with what he has. The second informs him of his limits. Assured of his temporarily limited freedom, of his revolt devoid of future, and of his moral consciousness, he lives out his adventure within the span of his lifetime. That is his field. That is his action, which he shields from any judgment but his own. A greater life cannot mean for him another life. That would be unfair. I'm not even speaking here of that paltry eternity that is called posterity. Madame Rollin relied on herself. That rashness was taught a lesson. Posterity is glad to quote her remark, but forgets to judge it. Madame Rollin is indifferent to posterity. There can be no question of holding forth on ethics. I have seen people behave badly with great morality, and I note every day that integrity has no need of rules. There is but one moral code that the absurd man can accept, the one that is not separated from God, the one that is dictated. But it so happens that he lives outside that God. As for the others, I mean also immoralism, the absurd man sees nothing in them but justifications, and he has nothing to justify. I start out here from the principle of his innocence. That innocence is to be feared. Everything is permitted, exclaims Ivan Karamazov. That, too, smacks of the absurd, but on condition that it not be taken in the vulgar sense. I don't know whether or not it has been sufficiently pointed out that it is not an outburst of relief or of joy, but rather a bitter acknowledgement of a fact. The certainty of a God giving a meaning to life far surpasses in attractiveness the ability to behave badly with impunity. The choice would not be hard to make. But there is no choice, and that is where the bitterness comes in. The absurd does not liberate, it binds. It does not authorize all actions. Everything is permitted does not mean that nothing is forbidden. The absurd merely confers an equivalence on the consequences of those actions. It does not recommend crime, for this would be childish, but it restores to remorse its futility. Likewise, if all experiences are indifferent, that of duty is as legitimate as any other. One can be virtuous through a whim. All systems of morality are based on the idea that an action has consequences that legitimize or cancel it. A mind imbued with the absurd merely judges that those consequences must be considered calmly. It is ready to pay up. In other words, there may be responsible persons, but there are no guilty ones, in its opinion. At very most, such a mind will consent to use past experience as a basis for its future actions. Time will prolong time. And life will serve life. In this field that is both limited and bulging with possibilities, everything in himself, except his lucidity, seems unforeseeable to him. What rule, then, could emanate from that unreasonable order? The only truth that might seem instructive to him is not formal. It comes to life and unfolds in men. The absurd mind cannot so much expect ethical rules at the beginning of its reasoning as, rather, illustrations and the breadth of human lives. The few following images are of this type. They prolong the absurd reasoning by giving it a specific attitude and their warmth. Do I need to develop the idea that an example is not necessarily an example to be followed, even less so, if possible, in the absurd world, and that these illustrations are not therefore models? Besides the fact that a certain vocation is required for this, one becomes ridiculous, with all due allowance, when drawing from Rousseau the conclusion that one must walk on all fours, and from Nietzsche that one must maltreat one's mother. It is essential to be absurd, writes a modern author. It is not essential to be a dupe. The attitudes of which I shall treat can assume their whole meaning only through consideration of their contraries. A sub-clerk in the post office is the equal of a conqueror if consciousness is common to them. All experiences are indifferent in this regard. There are some that do either a service or a disservice to man. They do him a service if he is conscious. Otherwise, that has no importance. A man's failures imply judgment, not of circumstances, but of himself. I am choosing solely men who aim only to expend themselves, or whom I see to be expending themselves. That has no further implications. For the moment, I want to speak only of a world in which thoughts, like lives, are devoid of future. Everything that makes man work and get excited utilizes hope. The sole thought that is not mendacious is therefore a sterile thought. In the absurd world, the value of a notion or of a life is measured by its sterility.